I think we're live. So welcome to the 1st 2 Battalion Chief. I'm Danny Sheridan, and tonight we're going to be talking about exterior streams. And with me right now, presently, we have two guests. I have Deputy Chief Steve Schaefer from Boston. Welcome, Steve. Thanks for being here tonight.
My pleasure, Danny.
It's always good to hear your voice. And I have Deputy Chief Chuck Downey from the FDNY. Chuck, real pleasure to see you
tonight. Thank you, Dan, for the invite.
Always great. We're supposed to have Frank Lee. Frank is a little, you know, he's a staff chief, so he's always got things going on. And my bad, I forgot to text our other guest, Tom Burke. I'm hoping that he sees this text message and joins us at some point. But anyway, so welcome, guys. I know that we've all been involved with the UL studies on, you know, using the fire dynamics, for lack of a better word, and talking about ventilation and all the new technology that's being introduced to the fire service. And, you know, I think it's kind of cool that, you know, we have this technology now because we didn't have this, came on the job, and because fires have changed, right? There's no denying that we're now dealing with more petroleum-based fires, and the fires, I know it sounds like a cliche, but they're almost, you could really say that they're hotter today. They're burning much hotter, much faster, going to flash over much earlier. And to have somebody like UL do these studies and really measure, you know, what we've already known is tremendous. So I guess I'll start with you, Steve. So, Steve, you know, we both took that boot camp in Randall's Island. I guess it was, 2 years now. And we, you know, we talked about a lot of stuff, ventilation. But particularly tonight, I want to talk about exterior streams. I know Chuck is a big advocate, you know, for the exterior streams, and we'll get to Chuck in a minute. But what's your experience so far now with taking what we learned from the UL and applying it to the actual fire ground?
Well, let's see. Where do I start? So I want to say that, you know, it's, when I first heard the UL studies, and this was probably 2 or 3 years before onto the boot camp, some of our guys had gone down to another one they had down in maybe Philadelphia or somewhere down there. And they had one of the chiefs, I was a district chief at the time, and the deputy showed me this thing, oh, you know, the use of exterior streams on fires. And I just dismissed it out of hand because at that point for 28 years or so, we had been taught, you know, you got to get in there and push it from the unburned side out. You know, and it was like definitely anathema to put water, unless you were in a defensive mode, you know, and you said, that's it, we've abandoned the building, basically. We're going to go in and put water in from the inside. And I think that that's not unique to Boston. I'm sure that was that's the attitude, and it's probably still the attitude on some of the guys in the street in New York, you know, that was not seen as something that we did. That was, you know, small departments that didn't have the staffing and the manpower, and, you know, they wouldn't get in there, and, you know, we're going to get in there. So it was really eye-opening for me when I went down to New York and started to see some of the studies and then saying, hey, you know, this is – we're not making this up. Fires – behave a certain way, you know, it's physics, it's chemistry, and this might actually, or this does work. And I started to change my thought process fairly radically. So up in Boston, based on that, and then the further stuff that that I researched, we started rolling out what we call it the Fire Dynamics Program. And the first phase, because that exterior water would be such a operational change for us, and I don't think we were quite ready there. That was at least the walking, if not running, part of the phase. We start with the crawl. We went to just the study of how fire moves, and that you can't push fire with water. Although they're careful with that now, they say a fire stream can push, you know, a hose stream can push fire because of the air it entrains. But so we focus kind of on that aspect. We do a lecture, and we use the tabletop smoke prop. There's no smoke. It's burns denatured alcohol. It's like the dollhouse prop, but you can actually see inside. And I'll get into that later if you in more detail if you want. But we do that, and then we brought them down to this new building we have. We call it the Flow Pass Simulator, which was built special. It's a shipping container fire structure that you know, that helps simulate vent-limited fires and then what happens when you open up. So we the whole part about the coordinated ventilation, I guess, is basically where we started, that ventilation does not necessarily equal cooling. It has to be coordinated with suppression. We started with that. Well, we're almost ready. It took a while. COVID put a dent in it because we stopped training for a while, but almost got the entire job through that two session. It's the lecture and the tabletop demonstration, and the next week they go down and do live fire. The next phase, as I see it, is going over exterior water. You know, how to properly apply the stream, because if you do it wrong, you can make things worse. And just that it's a viable tactic in certain situations. And stressing that we're not expecting this to be the first thing you do necessarily, or, you know, we're still going to go inside. It's still an aggressive attack, but that it's in certain spots at certain times, it's really advantageous to put water through a door, through a window, for a variety of reasons. So we're getting there. And I actually have a story, which I'll get to a little later, about some of the guys who went through it have been applying that. I have an example just happened last week where exterior water was used to great effect. And it's just a really crystal clear example of what we're talking about and where we want to go.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, and I know Chuck's got some stories too, but, you know, I want to thank you. Believe it or not, I took the lecture portion of that. I think Captain Mike McCarthy was doing the class.
Yes.
In, I forget the firehouse, I want to say 17 truck. And
Broadway, 17th.
And then you were nice enough to invite me in that day on that Saturday for that refresher, and I saw that prop, and I was really kind of impressed, because it's a flashover. It's, you know, trying to paint the picture, it's a flashover simulator, but on a level ground, and I was very impressed with the only thing I was concerned about, though, that we were on that bay, and I can't believe how windy it was, and that you still were pulling that off with the you know, doing that experiment with that wind condition. But you guys did a great job, I have to tell you.
It reinforces it. It's different every day down there, depending on the wind. Sometimes the fire behaves a little differently, even though it's the same fuel package. And that's just a talking point. It's like, look, wind can overcome this. You know, you got a 20 or 30 mile an hour wind blowing through that door, even if you're moving it and you're trying to push it, it's like the wind's going to win. So,
right.
You know, it's
so I want to read something from the UL boot camps. It's core concepts. It's number 23. Put water on the fire quickly from the best advantage. It says, rather than making conditions more hazardous, applying water directly into the fire compartment as soon as possible has shown to be the most effective means of suppressing a fire. Research has shown applying a hose stream through a window or a door into a room involved in fire significantly lowers the room temperatures everywhere in the home. Even a small amount of water applied as quickly as possible, regardless of where it's from, improved conditions inside the burning home. And in cases where the front and rear doors were open and windows had been vented, the applications of water through one of the vents enhanced conditions throughout the structure. Now, Chuck, we've been doing this a little bit with the floor below nozzle. And we saw what a great impact that had just on that little amount of water to knock the starch out of that fire. But
right.
I know you have to leave at 8 o'clock, and I want to welcome, I think that's Tom. I'm guessing that's Tom because I see another Boston number. So if you're there, Tom, welcome. Thanks for being here, Tom.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can
yeah.
hear you. Thanks
hey,
for being
Tom.
Here tonight, Tom. So,
oh, good.
So Chuck, I know you came up with your own little system called the 4 S's, and I know you've had some great experiences, so if you care to expand on that, by all means, I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah, sure, Dan. I think, you know, Steve hit a lot of it. You guys have been speaking about, obviously, UL and the science part, you know, whether it's the boot camp that we all attended or, you know, online, you know, they have a great Fire Safety Academy. So as far as what Dan and Steve and their staff have put out, UL, I think that science tied with experience, I think what kept resonating is, okay, what are we using to apply water? You know, the whole solid bore versus the fog. You know, are we whipping that nozzle around? All these different things that we've discussed over the last 30-plus years. And I think the science now combined with the experience, you know, we call it the four S's, you know, came about through really experience, academy, strategic awareness training for the chief offices, you know, sharing experiences. And once again, it kept resonating, you know, these things to apply exterior water when you have to. Now, you know, when do you have to? You know, is it a, you know, a private dwelling and a you got to put it in a cellar window because you can't get down the stairs? Or maybe it's a brownstone, right? My first one was a brownstone blowing out two windows. The truck couldn't get to the door underneath the stoop. Couldn't force the iron. The fire was too strong. And the officer's like, hit that fire so the truck could get in there. So that was my first experience 31 years ago, exterior. Or even like a taxpayer, right? We talk about taxpayers hitting it from the sidewalk before we're going in. So I think that whole concept, the taboo about just hitting it from a window, you know, and then moving in. Obviously, Steve mentioned the staffing issues. You know, we're, you know, FDNY, like Boston, we're aggressive interior attack. You know, I think in certain buildings, you know, what other cities do, maybe they, you know, the transitional, I think it can be applied depending on the situation. And, you know, the four S's that we came up with, and, you know, Frank can elaborate on this further. Hopefully we'll be in our engine operations, our new engine ops that will be coming out. But it's basically four S's. The first S is a solid bore, and that goes back to, you know, if you have a solid bore straight stream compared to a fog or a crack nozzle. And Steve mentioned it once again, you know, that occlusion, the entrainment, et cetera. So we want a solid bore. We want to hold it steady. And once again, we don't want to whip it around like you're moving down an old Lord tenement, pushing it out the window. If you're going to use an exterior stream, there's no circular or whipping motion. So it's steady. So you got solid bore, you have a steady. Once again, steady, we talk about the occlusion. Steep angle is the third one. That steep angle is going to create what we really want. You know, we want to hit it off the ceiling, create the final S, which is the sprinkler effect. So those are the, you know, that sprinkler effect is going to cool the gases, and that steep angle, obviously, isn't going to hit someone in the mug on the other side of the room with solid stream or down the hallway, hurting someone as well. So the benefit of the chemistry and cooling the gases and the danger of hitting someone in the face with a solid stream are both taken away. And as I stated, you know, this is from UL, from strategic awareness and the FDNY sharing experiences, and, you know, just a an easy way for guys to remember, or incident commander to, you know, hey, solid, and make sure that's solid. Hey, hold that thing steady, guys, steep angle, you know. Because what do we see a lot of times from an exterior handline? Guys are whipping it around. You know, we don't know. That's the way we were brought into this job, right? So yep. Without talking too much further, I tried to keep it short and sweet, Danny.
Yeah, Chuck, you know, one thing I totally agree with what's going on right now, and I can't argue the science. I was there. I watched the UL studies. I mean, we have the measurability. We have all this stuff, but you know, from my own experience, I started out in 17 truck, and I spent 5 years in that bucket, and I did everything opposite of those four S's. I remember, like, you know, this is not a novel concept. I mean, 41 engine, we used to actually call them the Stang Gang, because they used to pull up and dump the Stang into a window in a three-story frame or a brownstone. And, you know, me being in a tower ladder, I mean, it wouldn't be uncommon. I mean, yeah, they were vacant buildings still, but you know, my goal was, like, I didn't know any better. I did what the senior men told me. I get that bucket right up to the window. I would try to get that stream up into the ceiling space, the cock loft, and rip that lath off and whip that thing around. And, you know, now kind of goes almost totally against everything that I learned as a firefighter, but I see the value in the four S's. We actually been doing remote tactical, and I usually end the drill with the four S's because
oh, that's great.
I think we I think what we have to do is, then I'll get to Tom in a second, but because he's a first due district chief like myself, that's Sigma. You know, I think it's going to be easier with this newer generation, especially, you know, the argument being that the petroleum-based products is just the fire is going to flash over within 3 or 4 minutes. I mean, it's just, it's not like the old days where it took 25 minutes to get to flash over. So I think the value in it is in, we're not wasting any time. Like, we're getting right on it, and it's not a commitment. It's just a quick, boom, knock it down so you can get in there. Right. So, Tom, mm-hmm. you're a battalion chief, a district chief like myself. Have you been able to use this proactively yet in any incidents? Do you have any firsthand experience yet? Because I only have one or two that I could think of myself.
As far as exterior water application?
Yeah.
I think years ago we did it when we thought it was appropriate, you know, even before kind of the UL stuff. But I think there was a real stigma to doing it. Nobody ever wanted to, you know, push the fire on somebody. That was the kind of the phrase we always used. I think a lot of that went back to kind of when you open a ceiling and there's fire in the joist and you open a line, whether it's straight, stream, or, you know, a combination pattern, you're going to push products of combustion down to the floor instantly. And, you know, the lights are going to go out. It's going to get scary for everybody. And if they don't have a mask on, they're going to take a beating. So I think a lot of that, you know, is all kind of being encompassed in the same phrases, you know. I think where that's where a lot of it comes from. I think UL did a really good job over the years of kind of conceding that, yeah, you can push some heat in the perfect circumstances if you use a broken pattern, and you know, it's possible. But I think water, when it gets in a room in significant amounts, it ends up cooling. But I do think there's some value in, you know, if somebody's walking around in a space and, you know, water comes in, whether it's from the outside or from the other end of the hall, and, you know, you don't have your mask on maybe, or you're not ready for it, and the smoke banks down to the floor, I mean, that, you know, it's a real concern. So, you know, there's a lot to this, right? It's very dynamic. There's a lot of, you know, it's multiple compartments. It's, you know, communication. There's differences between the smoothbore nozzles, you know, and the combos. With us, we use combos for years. I don't think we really probably use them properly. There was no maintenance on them. I think they're supposed to be maintained and calibrated every year. I don't think we really did that. If one of them got clogged with debris or pebbles, the company was kind of responsible for taking care of that and turning it in. But sometimes that stuff got missed. And, you know, I think there's advantages to going with. Does New York use exclusively smoothbore nozzles on, like, the cross lays now?
Well, we don't have cross lays. We have static loads. But the only place you'll see a fog nozzle is on the bumper for a trash line. But everything else, I think.
So that's
Chuck,
same with
think?
Us.
I think we had one company left that was, I saw a fog nozzle, but I think 99.9% of our engines and engines and smoothbore.
Yeah. Yeah. Temporal.
And did you guys feel that was an issue before when you had combo? Did you guys used to have combo nozzles pre-connected to your lines or?
Well, it was either, right, Chuck, it was either the FT2 or the smoothbore. And I think 69 engine, I see pictures from the early, like the mid-80s, where you see a lot of pictures with the smoothbore. I mean, the FT2, but
right.
We've gotten away from that.
Yeah, the area I came in over 30 years ago, the main bed had a solid, and the backup bed had a FT2. So, you know, if you were second or third or fourth through, you brought your own nozzle because you were pretty much switching out the second bed, taking the FT2 off. There was only one engine company that actually used that as their main line, the FT2. And that company apparently still uses it.
Yeah, I thought we had one left, Chuck. I'm not sure who it was.
I don't want to say any numbers, but that was where I was a firefighter. They still use it, and it's pretty interesting because no one else does. But it was on the second bed, you know, the FD2, so you always brought your solid.
Yeah. Some of the companies took pride. I know, like in Squad 41, when they were an engine, 41 engine, their nozzle, their main line, the tech line, was a nozzle that was been in that company for God knows how many years. And, you know, they would bore it out a little bit to get more, you know, opening. And so companies take a lot of pride in that nozzle, you know, their lead length nozzle. Would you say, Chuck, in New York is a true statement?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
The old brass nozzles, I've seen them on some of the older engine companies, you know.
But those would definitely be smooth bore.
Yeah, they're all smooth bore, the brass nozzles, especially the, you know, I know the area that I had come from, they all still use those brass smooth bores.
So, you know, like I said earlier, the first time that we actually saw, and I think opened a lot of eyes, was the Governor Island experiments with the floor below nozzle, where we saw such a little amount of water was able to knock the starch out of a fire. And I just want to read this from UL. It says here, if you get water where you need it to go, you don't need much. And it says, when dealing with the room and contents fire, the energy release is limited by the available oxygen, ventilation limited. It does not take a large amount of water to absorb the energy being released and knock back the fire. And I think, I mean, you know, we pride ourselves on, you know, our nozzles. We say our inch and three quarters could flow 180, our 2.5s could flow, what, Chuck, 250, I would say. And now we have that lead length.
Just below,
In the high rise.
You're right. The lightweight, I think, is down to 210, 220, the lightweight hose, right?
Right. But, you know, this is all eye-opening stuff that, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, if we get the water where it needs to go, you really don't need much because, you know, back in the day, when in the war years, in 60 engine, they had a lot of what we call railroad flats in New York, right? So you start at the back is where the kitchen and the bathroom was. You make that right turn, and it's like a railroad car, right? You know, it's just room after room after room. And the old timers told me that they used to stretch 2.5. But, you know, think about the time. They had no air packs, no, you know, the way they worked, it would be the nozzle firefighter, the backup firefighter would go in as far as they could, and then the masks were kept in a container, the two Scott packs, and they were like special pieces of equipment, and they would be in the back, and then the third and fourth firefighters, the door and the control, would wear the mask, and then they would go in and relieve these guys. So, you know, we all know human limitations, right? We can't. You know, we really can't breathe smoke. I mean, they used to get down low. I heard all the stories, and they would gauge how tough a guy was on how much smoke he could take. I'm sure Chuck's father, when you know, Ray Downey, when he came on the job, I'm sure he told Chucky and Joe numerous stories of his days as a fireman. But, you know, we don't have these issues today. You know, we have the technology. We have the ability now to, you know, to know how fire behaves, right? So, Steve, what are your thoughts about that? I know you saw some transition on your time on the job.
Yeah, sure. It used to be, I came on, everyone had Scots, but it was, don't put your face piece on until you have to. And I was like, well, what is have to? And the first few fires I went to, I said, oh, I see, have to is when you're hacking up little bits of lung, and then that's when you can pull your mask off. And of course, that's changed and for the better. But I just want to get back to exterior water for a minute. So I think the four S's is great, and we might incorporate that or something very similar into our training when we get to that. But that's kind of a tactical how-to. Like if you're going to do exterior water, that's the proper method for doing it. I think the harder push, I know it is up here, and it's probably down there as well. I watched that video that Richardson put out about exterior water, and was, you know, I think that was good. That was basically the top guy saying, hey, this is an okay thing to do in certain situations, is that strategic, you know, is getting the idea into the commander's heads and the guys as well, that, that that's an okay thing to do. In fact, it's a good thing to do depending on what's going on. And, I just, I'll run out of time and I'll tell the quick story. So we've been, talking about it peripherally in our fire dynamics thing, but we really haven't gone over exterior water in depth. It's not in any of our SOPs. It's you know, some guys know about it, but it's not standard procedure at all. So I was talking with John Kilrow just a couple of days ago. He's a lieutenant on Engine 24, busy, good company. He said they had a fire a couple of days ago that they weren't the first due. In fact, they were sent to a car accident. Fire alarm redirected them and said, no, go to the fire. He said he got there. There were already two lines in the building. It was a wood frame townhouse, you know, attached. And he said when he got there, he said the door was open. There were two lines in, but the fire was still blowing out the apartment window on the second floor. And he thought they should be getting water out by now. Something's not going like it. It didn't look like he expected to with the amount of time it took him to get there. The truck he was with, Ladder 23, one of the guys, you know, he also went in, and he came back out and said, they're stuck on the stairs, that they're not making the push. So they were going to get it, the plan A was they're going to get a ground ladder, which you know, portable, you guys call it, and take a line over the ladder up to the second floor. And John said, he's one of the instructors for the fire dynamics, and he's been teaching the flow path stuff. He said, hold on, we're going to hit it from the street. Charge the line. It was 1 3/4 inches. He said they put it in the window for, he didn't know exactly, but it was, I would say, less than 30 seconds. And that was pretty much it for the fire. The two companies in there now got that relief. They went in, mopped it up. It was all done. Now, that's not a normal operating procedure for Boston, but he had the presence of mind because he'd been involved in the training to say, hey, there's two lines in there, and clearly whatever the problem is, they're not making it. There's fire now blowing out that window. It's going to threaten, you know, auto extension and everything else. Well, let's just get water in there. It's right there. We can see it. Let's put water on it. And that turned out that was the right move. And, he knew how to, hey, hold the line steady, straight stream. And it worked out good. So, and I think that, you know, nothing breeds success like success. So if that story, I said, tell everybody you can that story, John, because if it gets into guys' heads that, hey, that worked, that's okay, that in situations like that, it might be repeated. And that's what we're looking for. I mean, I don't expect the first company coming in to necessarily, oh, there's fire blowing out that window, let's put water on it first, although that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing to do. But I think that Tommy mentioned it basically is that we're going to cook the people inside. You're going to push that fire. You know, it'll go down the hallway. You'll make it worse. You'll kill people, which is just, you know, as you can demonstrate with the science, not the case. And
right.
So if you know what you're doing.
So it may get smoky in there, though. You know,
right.
Well, but
it may get a little smoky down
that
hallway, though. You know, that's definitely a concern. But I think, you know, if you're delaying water application just for the fact of trying to do it from the inside and it's significant, it's probably a mistake. So I think UL is trying to push that message, like getting water on the fire as fast as possible is the bottom line, really. And I think, you know, that's a pretty good rule of thumb, you know. I mean, you'd want to run by a cellar window that's in the front of the building with a flat line, run to the back of the building, try to force some sort of bulkhead, maybe through in a basement apartment all the way to the front again, charge the line there. That would take you an awful lot of long time. You know, you may be better off just charging it right at that cellar window. So that would be a clear example of charging the line. I mean, putting water on the fire faster, much faster, because you were able to get it from the outside.
I like it. I think what maybe us as chief officers need to do then, if we are going to employ that tactic, is that it just is a matter of coordination on our part. Hey, maybe a radio transmission, battalion 3 to all units, just be advised, we're going to hit it from the outside, you know, maybe get behind a door or get behind a wall.
I left
something.
That part out of my story. John said specifically he radioed the companies and said, we're going to hit it from outside, you know, take cover and back, you know, back down, take cover, and then waited a few seconds and then did it. You know, so it just, I don't know. It's, I think that the hard part is selling the fact that that's a viable tactic to the troops, rather than, you know, the training them how to do it is, you know, it takes time, but I think is a pretty quick learn.
Yeah. Steve, not
you
that
guys,
I'm,
you guys
I
have
to
a...
Yeah. Go ahead, Tommy. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you. You
guys have a really good training video, I think, you put together on a fire and maybe Queen. The chief browsed them and said, hey, we got to get water in the cellar window. They were losing the top floor. It looked like maybe a bunk. Yeah, that was an excellent, you know.
That was Brian Shovlin. He's a deputy now. I think Chucky's very familiar with that. Chuck, what was that about? They were burning in the basement, right? And he said open
line. That was my area. So what happened was it was a private dwelling. They had went in the front door, the first engine, first ladder, staircase to the cellar was in the rear kitchen. The truck had got down into the cellar as the engine was advancing on the stairway is when it lit up. And the truck was in a position in the cellar where they were out of the flue, and the engine had got caught in this flue as they were advancing. And we had a couple guys burned. We had a mayday, but we had a second hand line charged on the exposure two side, so the B side. And that officer had made everyone aware, hey, we got heavy fire out the cellar windows. If you can't advance down, we can knock it down. As soon as the mayday was transmitted, we did have a couple of guys that were burnt. That second hand line had knocked down the fire. 1, 2, 3. We had a ladder officer and the inside team in the cellar that no burns, no injuries, no scorchings. The only ones that got burnt were the ones at the top of the stairs coming down on the first floor. So that was an interesting part of that fire. We had three members in the cellar where it lit up and took off up the stairs. We had two engine firefighters burnt, no ladder firefighters in the cellar burnt from an exterior stream and from the fire taking off. So that was a very interesting fire where an outside stream with a mayday, and our members did not get injured who were in the cellar. You know, it went well as far as that's concerned, you know.
If I had to guess, I would think that the members that were burnt on the stairs, they would have been probably worse off if that line to the basement didn't get deployed, correct?
Oh, yeah. I used the audio transmissions in my Mayday class for the battalion chief's course and the captain's course. So I do a little Mayday section, and those handy talky transmissions I actually use in that class. And if that line is not used, the way the fire took off and got them on the stairs and came into the kitchen, and obviously, like, I think Steve was alluding to it before, like, Steve mentioned about that fire, the frame with two hand lines in and not advancing. You know, was it clutter? Was it structural alterations? How come we have two hand lines and not putting water on fire? So now, you know, is it clutter? Is it alterations? Is it intensity of heat? What if it's not working? So what works that outside stream? And once again, I think, you know, this fire represented a situation where we were always fearful of using an outside stream about injuring the firefighters on the inside. And it didn't do any of that. You know, the three firefighters in the cellar were unharmed at all. You know, so it was, and we have a few other ones that we use in training, but that one was a real good example. So it's a time and place for everything. We're not, you know, Boston and New York, we have sufficient staffing that we can try that interior, where other departments have to do transitional or defensive initially, you know, due to staffing issues. As far as us, yeah, we can give it a shot, but Danny made a point just now, you know, until you're in that, you know, that incident commander role and you have to make that decision, you can't be thinking too long. That's a quick decision. The communications have to be relayed, boom, 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 you know. And I think that's what the four of us can offer to anyone listening right now. You know, that incident commander call, you got to make that call.
Yeah, Chuck, I don't know if you ever heard this story, but it was prior to the UL studies. A friend of mine, Anthony Sacravino, was covering in my old battalion, the 14th battalion. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Squad 41 was first due. It was Park Avenue and 149th Street, a 40-story building, 1077.
Wait, are you talking about the one in 2013?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 225, 149.
149, yeah. Yep, I know the building.
149, because, yeah, when I was a lieutenant in Squad 41, it's a 27-story federally built building, 1974, with foam insulation on the interior walls.
Right, 27 stories. I was, believe me, I was 17 truck. We were first through there, and when I was in 41, we were first through there. So this
With
the foam, you saw, man, and the wind, right? So 41's first due. Mickey Conboy's working. We have, like, all-stars working. Steve Luisi was told me they were hanging babies out the windows. Because this building is actually unique. I'm going to go just off topic a little bit. They have these vents in the hallways, and the smoke was permeating the whole building. They were hanging babies out the windows in the 20s. So they're not making any progress. They can't even get out of the stairway. They're in the attack stairway. They're getting crushed. And the line, the 2.5, is doing absolutely zero. And it's just so fortunate that the fire was, what was it, Chuck, the third or fourth floor? It was the lower floor, right?
It was the fifth floor apartment, and the intensity the foam was, they couldn't advance due to the intensity,
Right, and the woman had bins in her room, I think. That was even fueling the fire even more.
Yes, and there was other plastics in the room.
Right. Anthony told me this. He was in my study group, my deputy study group, and he told me exactly what happened. He says 83 engine was there. They took the line. They opened it up, and he said it was like magic. He said the fire went out like in seconds. And this is a fire that was like, I mean, we had, I think, what was it, 40, 1045 codes, twos and threes at that fire?
Yep, 42 1045s, 42.
Which in our books is an injury to a civilian. And it was amazing. It was a grace of God that no one got killed. And yet a simple thing that would have been unheard of, like, you know, even when I came on a job to even think about using the exterior stream, it was only, like I said, the grace of God that they were on a lower enough floor that the line would reach there. And it just knocked the heck out of the fire. So, I mean, these success stories, Steve's story,
all the stories, that they're good for, you know, for everyone to listen to, whether you're a firefighter, an incident commander, an officer, because, what do we usually hear when we're in the street as an incident commander? Yeah, how's it going in there? Yeah, give us another minute. We're getting down the stairs. And then it's like, hey, how's the advance? Give us another minute. And then all of a sudden they stop responding to you.
And I've been on the other side. I've been inside. Yeah, we're good. Just give me another minute. We're good. We're knocking the fire down. You know, I mean, this is, I think what is going to have to happen is that the more these stories get perpetrated out to the field, you know, it's the awareness level will rise, and then we'll start seeing this more and more, right? So Steve, where are you at right now with this as a policy in Boston?
Like you said, we haven't done the exterior water, you know, module, if you will, of fire dynamics. That's coming hopefully starting in the fall, where we'll do, again, a quick lecture to go over the science and the concepts. Also, part of that will be the water mapping. So that's showing how streams break up and where the water actually flows. And then in that same building, that F building that you were in, Dan, we're going to have a company inside with a fire just observing. So when it gets hot, they say, oh, it's, you know, if we were in a hallway, this would be bad. And then the second company that's there is going to hit it from the outside. And so that they're going to get the technique, how to do it, and the company inside is going to see, hey, we didn't get fried. Like, things just got a lot better. I always feel like you can show people videos, even tell stories, but if they experience it themselves and say, oh, I was in there, and they hit it from the outside, and it got better, not worse. It didn't push a big blob of fire down the hallway on me, whereas if they had vented it without putting water on, that might have happened, that you're going to get good reinforcement. And once we get everybody through that, we might have we don't really have the bulletins like you guys do. We have an SOP, and the engine SOP just came out, so to change it is like is a big, big lift. But there's some official way of getting it out that like that is now enshrined as a viable tactic to use in certain situations. And you know, once everybody understands what we're talking about.
Well, you got the right guy. Just came on the line, Frank Lieb. And anything you need, I'm sure Frank would be more than happy to assist.
Hello,
Boston.
Frank.
So, Frank, welcome.
Hello, guys. Sorry, I'm late. So many different commitments, and I got a little derailed tonight. So I apologize for that.
Are we just talking about your favorite subject, Chucky's 4S?
What is that? Engine ops?
The 4S's.
The 4S's. Well, listen, you got, Chuck invented the acronym for the 4S's. And, you know, in the fire service, when we have acronyms and stuff like that, it's a really good way that we that our members remember it, right? When we're studying, there's lots of different acronyms that you remember, to remember the different when you put a life-saving rope out of service or the collapse, the stages of collapse. Searching, right, for after a collapse, right? All the different acronyms we use to remember them, and the 4S's is a really good one that is helping. You know, and the exterior water is a tactic of opportunity. For us in New York City, we have NFPA 1710 compliant staffing, so we're typically able to get in there and get out the fire. But if it's venting out the front window on the second floor of a private dwelling or first floor of a private dwelling, and we're stretching the line and charging it outside, 10 seconds of water using the 4S's is an appropriate tactic. And then getting right in there, right? So regrowth is the challenge, right? We want to get in there and do final extinguishment before it has a chance to regrow, because it's going to regrow if we don't get in there and put it out.
Right. So what Steve shared a story, and Chuck, we had some stories of successes, and I think we're going to see more and more of this as we go forward, and how UL Fire Dynamics gains more and more acceptability in the field. So, you know, Boston's now looking at it, and I guess we'll give them some advice on these 4S's and how we're doing with it. So, Frank, you're like on the forefront. You know, what are you seeing now from your perspective with the FDNY and this transition from the stigma being like we don't hit it from the outside to like, well, like this is a pretty good option?
Well, so in the first 4 months of the year, the FDNY had roughly 600 working structural fires, all hands or greater legitimate fires. And we've seen success at probably about a dozen of those where we used exterior water. It may have been clutter. It may have been a delayed forcible entry. It may have been a heavy below-grade fire where we put it in there, or a tactic of opportunity. It's in the front, and we have the charge line in front. So, you know, the cliche, right? It's it's another tool in the toolbox, but it simply isn't always going to be the go-to tactic, and a lot of it depends on staffing and how much fire there is and the demographics and the topography of what you have. So if it's in the Bronx and it's around back and you got to fight three pit bulls, a fence, and it's on a hill, you know, it's not practical, particularly with the first line. It's not practical. But, for us, especially as a battalion chief in a private dwelling area had a lot of private dwellings. For me, it was first line's getting in there. Second line is if they don't get it right away, we may consider it at that point, right? It was oftentimes a second line tactic. But for us, second line is being stretched almost simultaneously with the first one, maybe 30, 40 seconds difference. So, again, it's different. If you're showing up and you have two people on the fire ground, it's probably the go-to tactic because of your staffing. So it's a very different dynamic that we see in New York to, you know, New York City compared to other places. But it's just, you know, we try and marry the research with the tremendous experience of the FDNY to provide the best possible tactics, both for the firefighter and the people we're trying to rescue. And I think we do a good job, and we've been adaptive throughout, right? Throughout, I mean, as long as I'm on the fire department, we've always changed. Like, in my office, as you guys are all aware of, you've all been in there, I have the sign up there that says, you know, firefighters, the two things firefighters hate is the way they things are and change. But the truth is, we change and adapt all the time.
Right.
Right? I mean, right. You know, we have bunker gear, we have hoods, we have SCBAs. We don't have horse-drawn steamers anymore. So we are always changing. And in the FDNY, this month alone, we've edited 4 documents that I'm aware of. And the month's not over because we're issuing tomorrow, the next day, our fire dynamics training bulletin will be issued. So I think that's very progressive change that if we see an opportunity to adjust our policies and procedures that best protect our firefighters and best give them the tools to best protect the residents, we're gonna make those changes, and we're gonna make those changes quickly. But we're very rarely gonna be the first to change our procedures. We are very conservative in that regard, and I think that's a good thing. Being first doesn't mean you're right when you make a policy change. And I've seen departments change policies where they do a 180-degree change only to realize that what they were doing may have been the best policy. So we're very conservative in that regard, and I think that has played well for us in the several decades that I'm part of the fire department.
Yeah, but, you know, you wanna hear something funny. It's quite ironic. But when the chief that did that tactic, Chuck Bryan, you know, when the chief that initiated that tactic, very casually I said to him one time, he was a captain in my battalion, and I said to him after the fire, I said, hey, Brian, did you ever think about just giving it a shot? You know, it was a cellar fire. I said, did you ever think about just giving it a shot before, you know, you went down into the basement? And he's like, oh, chief. He goes, I never thought of that. You know, like, and it's so funny that he was the one that, you know, did that event. But I get a little pushback. I had a fire a few years ago, again, before the UL. The same situation. It was a basement fire. A cellar fire, excuse me, Chuck, cellar fire. It was a cellar fire. And I said to the engine officer, I said, give it a quick shot. And he did. And, you know, one of the truck officers came up to me afterwards and said, hey, chief, you know, that was not a good move. You know, we were down there. And I was like, listen, it was a 10-second thing. It was just to knock the starch out of me, you know. So we're still going to get this pushback. But there's no denying the science. You know, we're seeing the results, right? Like Steve's story, that story in the 225-149, Brian Shelvin's story. We know that it works. And we have to, I guess, in a sense, take the bravado out of it, because I think it's being viewed as something like, well, now we're not aggressive anymore. And it's not the case. Bobby Holkin told me, we talked about this a few years ago, actually, and he said, you know, in the Pacific Islands, when they had naval battles, they would soften up the island first with the artillery from the battleships, and then they would land. And in a sense, maybe this is what we're doing. We're just softening up the target real quick. Not a novel concept. I remember many times in the Bronx back when I came on, the chief saying, hey, 17, give it a shot with the towel ladder, and then the engines came and knocked it out. So, you know, this is where we're at right now. So with that being said,
we're not just looking at the research, right? I mean, we're coupling that with our vast experience and making the changes based on that. And we've seen it. We've had multiple successes on this. Again, this is not, you know, it's not going to be the tactic that we do all the time, and nor should it be, because we have the staffing. But, you know, there's times where it just, you know, it's the best tactic. And, you know, somebody told me, they put it best. They said, What do you want the fire service to do if your family's in there and they're on fire, you know, and their apartment's on fire? How do you want it? You know, do you want the fastest water on a fire or not? You know, it's your family in
there. Good point. Good point.
Right?
It's in perspective.
You know, the other thing is we're very fortunate in the fire service, right? The people that are drawn to our profession are get-it-done type of guys, right? How often do you have somebody even say, we're eternal optimists, right? You never get somebody say, hey, chief, I think we should pull the plug in here. No company officer, no firefighter, like, ever says that. If they do, you probably should have pulled the troops out long ago, right? But that's great that we draw those people to our profession. But, you know, we got to provide them with the tools and the tactics to best serve and accomplish their mission.
So, Frank, you're in the position to do this. So where do you see the fire department, let's say in 5 years from now, with respect to this dynamic, the UL boot camp, the core concepts? Is this going to be embraced, or are we still going to get this pushback?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that we'll continue to embrace the research and couple it and evaluate it based on our experience, and we'll develop the policies and procedures necessary to adjust to whatever is over the horizon, whatever it is that comes our way. We'll continue to evaluate as we have, certainly for as long as I'm involved with this. And again, so we got involved with NIST and later UL with Dan and Steve at UL now, but it was at our request following Vandalia Avenue. So all the wind-driven studies, everything that came out of that was basically our request, because we wanted to have a better understanding what happened at Vandalia Avenue. And that was probably, in my career, the biggest change that we made to our firefighting procedures when we implemented the wind-driven fire procedures, which everybody wasn't in agreement with them. But as more people are aware of them, and certainly everybody knows them now in the FDNY, you know, the results, right? It's been successful for us, and it's been successful for, you know, for more than a decade.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, I view the fire service like this. Now, I've been on the job 35 years, right? So, you know, when I came on, I still remember, like, I hate to say this, but, like, you know, it was our company policy that if you're up in the bucket, you don't wear a mask. You don't even bring it, you know. And we had a guy pass out in the bucket one time, and I went home with a headache more than once from being in that bucket, you know. And the old time is, you know, especially with the vacant buildings, we're like, you're not wearing a mask. And I'm like, okay, you know. So, I mean, it's a constant battle, though, right? I mean, then, you know, now the next thing that came up after that was the rabbit tool, the bunny tool, and we had to adjust to that, right? Because all of a sudden the trucks are popping the door in 2 seconds, and they're getting in there really quick, right, before the engines could even get the line into the building, right? And whatever, you know, thermal imaging cameras, just name it. The list goes on and on. It's a back and forth, you know, with this sort of technology. And then, you know, then we had the energy efficient windows. I remember that came on upon us, and we took a beating. I don't know if you remember that, Steve. You probably remember that as well, when they started putting in those energy efficient windows, and that was a big thing. Now, like, we couldn't vent the windows. What? And the fires, you know, were growing, and I'm sure Tom remembers it as well, up in Boston. Like, those of, you know, we're old enough to remember this stuff. Like, you know, I can remember single pane glass windows just cracking at the, like, you know, a few hundred degrees. And now, you know, we're getting our brain kicked in because, you know, we're not getting any vent. So it's a constant struggle in the fire service. And I'm sure it's not going to end with the UL studies. I'm sure there's going to be other things down the horizon that we haven't even thought about. Hybrid buildings, platform buildings, lightweight. I mean, the list is just going to go on and on. And, you know, we have guys like Frank, who's very forward-thinking, you know, at the helm at the training academy, that stays on top of this stuff, which is a blessing, because, you know, if we didn't, you know, we could get caught short. Like we did, I hate to say, we had a rough patch in the 90s with between the energy efficient windows, the rabbit tool, no bunker gear. It takes a while to kind of get acclimated to the new environment, you know, and we'll save that for another time. The platform buildings you guys have in Boston, and we're starting to see them here. But again, it's never ending, right? So anyway, so what we'll do is we have about 10 minutes left. I didn't even give out the number because we've been so wrapped up in this conversation. But in case anybody wants to call in, I usually give the number. The number is 760-454-8852. And if you'd like to talk to one of our chiefs from Boston or New York, Chuck had to leave us. He stayed on a little longer than he expected. He had a commitment at 8 o'clock. But, you know, I know this is generally listened to as a podcast, but if there's anyone listening live, you want to call in, any questions for any of us, feel free to call in 760-454-8852. And if not, Steve, Tom, just on behalf of FDNY, you know that you're like our sixth borough. I mean, is anything we ever could do for you guys? I mean, you got the right guy at the helm. I mean, we'll be there.
We appreciate it. We've gotten a lot of help from you guys in the past.
It's a great
academy, you know.
Yeah, I know. We have this whole Red Sox Yankees thing going on, and the Patriots, and whoever, but you know, that's all fun and games, but. You know, when it comes down to it, you know, we really hold you guys in very high regard, you know, and I think it's a great relationship that we have between Boston and New York, and guys like Frank and Chuck, you know, being around, it's just an open door, and you know, it's great to see you guys come down. I love going up there. I mean, so it takes me a week sometimes to lose the accent, though. That's my problem. Steve, I don't know how you lost your New York accent, because that's a tough accent to lose.
It just sloughed off, like, you know, like a wound after a while, it heals. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. People, I don't sound like I'm from anywhere now.
All right. Well, Tom, any closing thoughts? Any, you know, first
you know
two battalion chief ideas?
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So one thing I'll just share, a little thing about our culture, is we have a lot of multiple family wood frame buildings, right? Like they call them three-deckers, and then we even have some bigger ones. And a lot of them have exterior wood siding. They have wood porches. So we have a lot of porch fires, and they're pretty spectacular. You know, you can get two of them going at once, two or three buildings at once, but, you know, flames are shooting 50 feet in the air, but really they're like one line fires. And if the, you know, in the old days they used to run down the driveway and charge the line, and they went out in 2 seconds. Our culture kind of was so driven towards the inside Jake thing that we were having three lines go in the front door when we had back porch fires. We you know, we ran into it several times, and you know, maybe that like RID engine would come, or that fourth engine would come and put it out, but really it should have always been the first line that went to that, you know. I mean, it's so much easier to put an exterior fire off from the outside than the inside, but that culture was so ingrained on getting in the front door that we were actually dropping the ball significantly, you know, in that regard, you know. You agree with that, Steve?
I do, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that was one of the first things that we got to address with the UL stuff.
Yeah.
Like, look, we get rare porch fires. You know, you're the first engine. You can't be running the front door. Like, you know, don't give me this, like, I'm going to save some babies. Like, we're going to get water on this right away. We're going to have three buildings going, not one. So we got to address that right away. And I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's actually addressed in the UL. They talk about that, like something about Frank, maybe you know better, with the front door, how it's not the always the case where we have to come in the front door?
Well, it's you want to use the entrance door that gives you the quickest access to the fire, and that's certainly not always the front door. And then the same thing with a cellar fire. You want to fight it on the level it's at. So for us in the FDNY, oftentimes, particularly for a cellar fire, that means we're going to use the door on the exposure 204, right, the B or D side for, you know, for everywhere else but New York. But, yeah, I mean, that's – and I'm sure Boston is the same. You shouldn't be blindly just going to the front door just for the sake of going to the front door. That's kind of the biggest takeaway and the change.
I'll read it to you verbatim. Number 36, A, door closest to the fire engine should not dictate hose line or stream placement. The door closest to the apparatus should not dictate line, stream placement. The plan of attack, fire attack, and tactics used should be as dynamic as the fire themselves. Develop alternatives to using the front door, procedures that can be used when adapting how the fire presents, train on them, and have options that are understood by the team. So, Tommy, you're spot on. That's exactly what UL was saying.
Well, they have another rule of thumb. I've definitely read it or heard it. It's if the fire starts on the outside, that line, the first line should be on the outside. I don't think anybody can really argue with that.
Exactly. I had a fire. They used it for training. It was a 73 engine. The chauffeur was just phenomenal chauffeur. Richie Bonacorser and Kevin McCutcheon was the officer. It was a three-story frame, heavy fire on the outside. Richie pulls up, dumps the stang, the deck gun, and at the same time they stretch the line on the interior. The most we had at that fire, we could have had easily three floors of fire. We had some little extension to the window frames. And I put them in for unit citation, like, without question. I mean, it was just a phenomenal job. I think Frank probably has seen the video because I don't know who took the video, but it was just a phenomenal job by 73 Engine. And I think that's testimony right there, what you said, Tom, what we're talking about, you know, that mindset.
Yeah, it's tough changing a culture, though. You know, it's your department's very big, but ours is a good size too. And it really is. You think you're beating a dead horse. You think you're really, you know, you sound like a broken record. But you know, there's a lot of companies and a lot of groups, and you know, a lot of people are really paying attention, but some aren't so much maybe. And you know, just kind of getting those messages like the indiscriminate breaking of windows and. You know, we thought that would be much quicker adopted, you know. It took some time.
Exactly right. So Steve, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, so I just in general, I'm glad that the UL's kind of come to the forefront and there seems to be a push by, you know, those of us who are paying attention to embrace the science. You guys must remember the comment by, I think it was Captain Gordon, Squad 8, who said, down at boot camp in New York, he said, "Dan, are we going to surrender to the science?" And I got a chuckle at that. But I mean, I just thought it was a common indicative of the culture. It's like science is something like in technology, there's something going to take away, you know, something that's basic to our understanding of our roles and our jobs. And my view is, let's embrace the science. It doesn't mean we have to go blindly, you know, with every new gadget and every new study, but embrace the science and use it to our advantage to make ourselves better and more efficient. I think that's how we got to look at it instead of smelling.
I think Frank came up with the best line. I'll let him close it out. It was evolution, not revolution. Right, Frank?
Yeah, we're just evolving. It's our generation's evolution, right? And I think, you know, what Steve said is right on. And I would just add that, you know, we're listening to the research. And we're combining our experience. And, you know, every profession evolves, and we're no different. But we're marrying it, and we're evaluating it, and we're not just blindly accepting it. And it's making us better. And there's simply no disputing that it's making us better. So I appreciate you having us on tonight, Dan, as always.
Oh, you guys are my best, my A-team. The real 18. So, yeah, I have nothing else to say, nothing to add. You guys have said it all. So, Frank or Steve, is there anywhere that people could get this online, this UL boot camp? Does UL have it on their website?
I don't think they have the whole boot camp, but they do have the FSRI website has a lot of training videos and modules, and they're all really good. So I don't know what the exact website is, but if you look up ULFSRI, you'll probably be able to get there.
Yeah, yeah, there's a ton of research, ton of resources on there. Their learning management system that they have on there is free. You just have to register. It's fantastic. There's a lot of classes. They're working on, I was just involved with helping create some of the newest ones that are going to be on the strip mall taxpayer flyers, and they're going to be excellent. I've seen a couple of the videos that they produced for it already, and it's just going to make their training that they have even better. So that would be my recommendation, is go on there and take all the classes that you can. You're going to be smarter for it, for sure.
I'll just read what I have here. It's section 3, the core concepts, boot camp toolkit, May of 2019. It's Fire Dynamics core concepts. Steve Kerber, Dan Majakowski, you could even reach out to them, but I strongly encourage anybody that's in the fire service that to view these videos and get this training, the PowerPoints. I'll get in touch with them, see if I could post some stuff, but some dynamic stuff. And if you got Boston and New York doing it, then I don't think you have to go any further. So without further ado, guys, again, thanks for being here tonight, giving up your time and sharing your knowledge. It's always been a pleasure. And with that, I'm gonna sign us out. Good night, guys.
All right, good night, guys. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks.